Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and AP Katie with Jay Gutierrez. It's Tuesday, April 16, 2024. Man, we talked Royals with Jamie Bloom and Mike Boddicker. We had Charles Goldsmith talking about the Chiefs. We played you plenty of sound from yesterday with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Nick Bolton. Nate told you the story about how he broke his leg.
You know, my dad always says that when he's wishing me good luck on a broadcast.
Break a leg.
Break a leg.
You sure did.
I finally took his advice.
You broke your leg taking a Segway tour of Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Okay. Hey! There's worse ways.
I saw a robbery in progress.
No, you didn't.
I jumped off the Segway at full speed. I felt my leg break, but still caught the guy.
Or you hit something in the road and went flying.
Or that.
Right. Let's say hello to Annie Rogers and see what she has to say about that. Annie, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
You ever been on a Segway?
No, that would not end well for me.
It didn't end well for Nate. So.
Yeah, you can use me as your as your warning. Be careful if you're going to take one of those, folks.
Right.
Yeah.
Cautionary tale.
I'm good. I'll stay far away from it.
Right. I mean, because you travel around a lot. You have an opportunity to maybe once in a while on an off day do some sightseeing. So none of that for you. We want you to stay healthy. You know what?
I'm a big walker.
Yeah.
A big walker around the cities.
Nate, any follow-up to that? She's a big walker.
I like to walk, yeah.
Not too much.
I thought, you know, cover a little more ground, be able to see just a bit more than at a walking pace, and maybe have some higher hospital bills, too. So.
Somebody, thankfully, that is not hurting as bad as you is Salvador Perez, and so it was some nervous times until at least Salvi on Twitter said he was fine, he's going to play today, not going on the IL. What's the update on Salvador Perez and his injury situation?
Yeah, about as good as the Royals could have hoped. He got an MRI, showed just a mild groin strain. Don't think it'll require an IL stint. Off yesterday, maybe off today, who knows. He'll go in and try to lobby that to manager Matt Quatrero. But wouldn't be surprised if we see him, you know, DHing or at first base just before he's, you know, cleared to go full go behind the plate. But, yeah, they got lucky there, and he was walking around fine. I saw him walk to the clubhouse on his way to get more treatment yesterday. So no limping or anything like that. Just, you know, very little pain, which is all good news.
It's all good news. And last night was good news because Seth Lugo continues his hot start with 7 shutout innings against the Chicago White Sox, helping the Royals to a 2-0 win in Chicago. I mean, how could they possibly have hoped for any better from Seth Lugo? 4 really good starts and 4 tries with an ERA now just above 1. He's been spectacular.
Yeah, he has. And it's just the way that he's gone about it, too. He's forcing weak contact. He's getting the strikeouts when he needs to. He's mixing up his pitch as well. I mean, he's a perfect example for these guys to follow. Both pitching and hitting, like players love playing behind him too. So he's been as advertised and more. The signing has looked great this 4 starts. He'll have his ups and downs throughout the year, but you know he's been really, really good to start 2024. Exactly what the Royals need.
We've spent some time today, Annie, talking about not just the overhauled starting rotation, but the pieces they found in the bullpen, and James MacArthur goes and gets a save, and considering the price they paid to get him, which didn't seem like much of a trade at the time, at least to us, back in May of last year, to have him closing out games for the Royals now, what does that say about the way that that J.J. Piccolo and his staff have been able to acquire some of the pieces that they have in this bullpen this year?
Yeah, it's exactly what they need to do. I wrote about this. I did a deeper dive into the offseason. I didn't write about MacArthur, but the point stands. One of the quotes in there, and I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit from JJ, was basically saying that the Royals need to do everything they can to be competitive, whether that's savvy signings, you know, trades, waiver claims, guys who have been DFA'd and make a small trade like they did with MacArthur. Those are the moves that the Royals need to make. Those on the margins, moves, not the big flashy ones that you see big market teams make, but the smaller ones that help their team in incremental ways. And all of a sudden, you've got a closer in James MacArthur. That's exactly what the Royals need to do. Their pitching team and Brian Sweeney and Zach Bove and some other key pieces, they identified, you know, James MacArthur's pitches, how he could improve potentially, and so they brought him over at a minimal cost to Kansas City and put him in AAA Omaha last year, had him work on his slider, his cutter, and then they brought him up, and he was not very good in that first outing. He's the first to tell you that. He went back down to Omaha and worked on all those things again and took everything that the Royals coaches said to heart and came up and was dominant last year, and he earned his spot this spring too. So I think that's worked out really well for the Royals, and that's exactly what they need to do moving forward, is identify the guys they think they can, you know, help out just with pitch usages or adding a pitch here and there to make into a key player for them.
I mean, just think about it. If things continue to go well, and he continues to pitch well in the bullpen. I mean, they made these trades, none of which were blockbusters. I mean, the Aroldis Chapman deal, because of his name, was a big deal, but they very well could have gone out and acquired their number one starter, their DH, and at least part-time closer in trades that didn't, like you said, you know, weren't blockbusters. The trades, you just go out and you hope to get something of value, but it looks like they ended up with those three trades getting three impact players, and it's not always going to work out that way, but that's incredible return.
Yeah, you're exactly right in that it's not always going to work. We can all look for trades that, you know, in hindsight don't look great. But then you have to look at the trades that do look great. And last year, those were some good ones, bringing in James MacArthur, bringing in Cole Reagans for Chapman. I mean, they didn't think that Cole Reagans was going to be as dominant as he was last year, but they saw some things when they were scouting him that they really liked, and he was a young starter with control, and that's what they needed. Same with Nelson Velasquez. They needed right-handed power, and that's what the Cubs had. And then they brought them in, and you have to have faith in your coaches and your support staff to help these players, whether that's with Cole adding the slider or with Nelson Velasquez. I think the game planning and approach from the Royals hitting coaches have been instrumental in what he's been able to do over the last, you know, couple months with the Royals. You have to have faith in what your coaches are doing and preaching and have them help the players, and I think that's what we've seen. So, yeah, these trades have been really good. There's going to be trades that haven't been very good, and that's how the game works, but you got to hang your hat on and give some credit when it does work out.
All right, something else that's working out right now is Vinny Pasquantino. After his early season struggles, he's on fire. He had a home run, a double, and a walk yesterday. He's got 10 ribbies in his last five games, along with three home runs. He's getting on base. He's hitting for power. He's driving in runs. And that's one of the points we made early when the Royals were playing well, but Vinny hadn't done much, didn't have any ribbies until that breakout game against who was it? Was it the White Sox or the
Astros? Yeah.
And so the Astros. And so we made the point, like, hey, not all of these guys are going to stay hot, but eventually Vinny's going to get hot. And when he does, he gets so hot, he can carry a team. You're seeing that right now. He didn't have to totally carry the team, although he did yesterday somewhat. But he gets hot enough to where, I mean, he's incredible, and the last five games he's shown that. It looks like things are really starting to click for him.
Yeah, he's locked in right now. You know, we saw he was taking some pretty good at-bats early on in the season, and there were a few times where he would get out of his approach or he'd swing at things that he doesn't typically swing at just because he was pressing to try to get those results. But, you know, finally you see it locked in for him, and it clicked, and last night, I mean, he really did. He did carry that offense with the homer. The White Sox starter's making his debut, has a perfect game going through 3 2/3, just pretty much dominating the Royals the first time through the order. And finally, Pasquantino gets a middle fastball and drives it 420 feet out to right field. So that was big. And I think when you look at the offense as a whole, there's going to be guys who go through slumps. We're seeing that a little bit right now with a few different guys. But you have to have faith in your other any other hitters to be able to pick him up. That's what the offense did for Pat Quintino in the first couple of games, and that's what he's doing now for a lot of the guys too. So that's what a good team. That's what a good team does. Is they pick each other up, and they have enough depth throughout the lineup to get through games without everybody hitting the cover off the ball.
One of the guys that is going through one of those struggles right now is Mikel Garcia. He got off to a really good start right on opening day, but he's been in a little bit of a funk here late. You hearing much about what they think he needs to work on or what he's going through right now?
Yeah, I think he's kind of just getting caught in between. You know, he wants to be aggressive and get on base, but he also is known for his selectiveness. He wants to be selective, and maybe that turns a little bit into passiveness too. So that's a tough place to be for a hitter, is in between those two mindsets. So he just needs to simplify. This is going to happen. It's, you know, pitchers are adjusting to him now that he's got a big sample of at bats and how he does things, and now he has to adjust back. That's what they're working on. It'll be interesting to see if there are going to be any changes to the lineup. I haven't heard anything in regard to that, but I wonder as this goes on, maybe they move him down, let him have a day off or so. I don't know how they're going to go about that, but it'll be interesting to see if they do make any changes just to let him get back on track, because when he is going well, like we saw at the beginning of the season, he's a great leadoff hitter. He's perfect to set the table for Bobby and Benny and get things going at the top of the order. So they need that hitter back with Mikel Garcia.
Look, the Royals were really bad last year, and we saw, 32 different pitchers made a start for the Royals. And so we get it. We're not too far removed from watching bad baseball. But my God, are the White Sox terrible. The Royals should get credit, but they're 2-14, and I feel like I have a pretty good grasp of prospects. There's starting pitchers that I don't know who they are that are starting for the White Sox. I mean, they're just rolling people out there, and this looks bad. I mean, what was the stat earlier? Our very own Curtis Siebold tweeted out, there's only been a handful of teams that have lost 14 of their first 16 games in a season. The Royals did it one time way back in 2002, but this has only happened 15 times ever, and they're the first team since the 2010 Orioles to do it. This is that's a benefit of having them in your division, right? You take advantage of the opportunity to play a bad team, but I don't think did anyone anticipate they were going to be this bad?
I don't think so, especially in the AL Central. I think everybody kind of thought, well, you know, who knows what's going to happen. You mentioned that said, I'll give you another one.
Oh boy,
this one really. We got this one last night in our Slack channel, that our game Slack channel, and it says the only teams in MLB history to be shut out six times in the first 16 games of a regular season: the 1907 Brooklyn Superbas and the 2024 Chicago White Sox. So that's tough. Be shut out six times in the first 16 games. The Royals offered one of those shutouts last night, and things don't look good. We'll see some of their young guys come up over the course of this year. We saw it already last night, and we'll see another guy make his debut tonight. But it's tough over there, and I told the writers, I feel for them. I've been in their shoes trying to find different angles to write about this team, but it's a tough spot to be in.
I mean, they've been shut out six times already? I didn't even realize that. Good God,
yeah.
This thing's...
Yeah.
I mean, this thing's over. What was the name of the team in 1907 that you said?
The Brooklyn, I don't know if I'm saying this right, the Brooklyn Superbas?
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah, Never heard of that nickname before.
Exactly.
Right. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, they had a bunch of guys with weird nicknames, on their team.
Actually, in 1907, they actually finished with 65-83. They turn things around. I don't think the White Sox
are
going to do that.
Yeah, there you go. So there's hope.
Yeah,
there's hope. No, I feel for the White Sox. I didn't think things would be this bad, and there's a lot of former Royals over there. So it's tough to watch. But Yeah, they're one in, I think they're 1-10 in the division that they thought they might be able to compete in. So it's tough, but you know, it's a long season, and anything can happen. So we'll see how, if they can turn things around. But certainly the Royals are trying to take care of business this week, these next 2 days before getting a big test this weekend against the Orioles.
1907 Brooklyn, managed by Patsy Donovan, featured Nap Rucker and Doc Scanlon in the on the pitching staff, and old Whitey Alperman was on the infield along with Doc Casey.
You got a couple of Docs,
a Nap, a Whitey, a Patsy. So you know, hey, this is big stuff the White Sox are up against right now. I bet White Sox fans feel like taking a nap during these games, but you know, who am I to say? Hey, Brady Singer to the mound. He's been terrific. That's exciting to watch. And so hopefully the starting pitching will continue to roll against the bad Chicago White Sox team. And like you said, big test coming up this weekend. Hey, Annie, as always, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you.
That is Annie Rogers. Does a great job of covering the Royals for MLB.com. Doc Scanlon and Doc Casey on the same team.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
The Super Buzz.
Super Buzz.
Never heard that one before.
Yeah, I'm trying to look here and get some information on him. Mm-hmm. Whitey Alperman was the old second baseman. So I've never heard of that team in my life. I can't believe the White Sox have been shut out 6 times already. And 6, good God, do they suck. It's only 16 games.
I mean, it's going to be a rough year, man. You know,
that's almost half the games they play, they're shut out.
The 4 years I traveled with the Royals, they lost 100 games 3 of those 4 years.
I don't think you saw anything like that.
I saw some horrific things.
Right.
I saw some hilarious things in a tragic way. You know, this team might be worse than all those teams. I don't know.
How'd your leg feel?
You know, yesterday it felt a lot worse than it does today. I've been doing a good job staying off of it. That apparently is a big key. So thank you for asking.
Yeah. Well, 4 hours is a long show, you know. Yeah.
Our good buddy Sean Curry has reached out to me to offer to set me up with an ortho. I know you have as well, so I'm getting good. People be being very nice, so thank you.
There's great people out there ready to help you.
Yeah. So
If you'll take the help,
well, right.
You know,
you can lead a horse to water, as they
right.
say.
Jake, I ask you for your healing ways. Do you have something that could help him with his pain and with his mobility? You can't just hold back now. This is the time.
I don't think we realize how healing and how important food is. Medicine.
Right. It's see? Food. What can he eat? Give him a superfood that he can eat.
The donut was a good choice this morning.
No, I would say not.
You
want to eat food that doesn't cause inflammation in your body.
Right.
Tacos.
Nope. Inflammation's fried shell. Mm. Cooked in seed oils.
Well, your suggestions already suck now.
Well, I suck.
Yeah. Okay, then. That's settled. We'll take a break.
That's pretty easy.
Now I don't know who to listen to. You say tacos.
Listen to tacos, dude.
No.
I've rarely ignored tacos when they've called
tacos
me.
Didn't break your, they didn't break your leg.
No, they
all
didn't.
Right. Do you blame tacos? We will be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John. And Nate Bucati, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. You've heard us talking about an awesome experience that we had with the Music Theater Kansas City, mtkc.org, taking part in Rocky Live on Stage at B&B Live Theater off 435 in Midland. We play the broadcast crew that calls the fight between Rocky and Apollo Creed at the end of the musical. And to talk about that, we have the man that plays Rocky Balboa on stage, Drew Starlin. Drew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great. I'm really happy to be here.
Listen to this guy's voice. I mean, just right when he talks on the microphone, you know, this guy's
I couldn't
got some
tell
pipes.
If it was you or him. I was like, what? Nate, what happened to you?
Exactly.
So I saw with my entire family, 10 of us there, on opening night on Friday. First of all, Drew, because I care. That's just, let me throw it out there. And I appreciate being in it. So
no, it was really cool meeting your family. They were so gracious, and it meant a lot to us for you to be there. So thanks, you know.
I had one kid, Richie, dressed as Rocky because he's so, that's his, he loves it. And his girlfriend had the red beret that he had purchased for her for Christmas because they love Rocky so much. It's like a big deal to them because it's a big deal to me. And so I love it. I pass on to my kids. And, you know, my dad loves it. My wife loves it. Everyone loves it. And so that's why first thing I've said, if you love Rocky, if you're a fan of the Rocky series, fan of the first Rocky or any of them, you got to go see it. Because even though it's different, it's the same. But it strikes the same emotion, the same feelings. The relationship between Rocky and Adrian, the fight scene, and by the way, Shane St. James, got to mention him, who does a great job playing Apollo.
Yeah, what's up, King, if you're out there listening right now.
Right.
He's such a great character on stage and off. He's a lovely human being and such a giving actor as well. So how you doing, Shane?
The cool thing was you had chemistry with Adrian, and it was a really sweet scenes, you know what I mean? Especially when she first comes to your apartment, and it has that innocence and emotion that Rocky has, and it was so, I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Great, I really appreciate you saying that. Yeah, Jasmine Hall, who plays our Adrian, is an absolute firecracker. She is a newer talent to the Kansas City area, and she's for sure going to make a lot of noise. She's been lovely to work with, and we worked very, very, very hard on that scene because, you know, it's one of the most beautiful kisses, I think, in cinematic history that
right.
they create there. It's completely loving. And you also have to look at the circumstances of the 70s. It's a little not quite on point for this time of our lives. So we really talked through that, giving her a little bit more power, but still trying to hold that innocence and that really just two people lost in a crazy world finding each other.
And the way you guys did the iconic ice skating scene, I thought was really cool as well.
Yeah, that worked out well for us. Another element when we went back and looked at not only the movie but also at the script that we got versus what they did on Broadway. Because, you know, our theater's got certain confinements that we have to obviously hurdle over. And that was one of them, but I think it turned out really, really, really well.
So let's tell people about your background and what led you up to this point. You have a long list, a long resume of acting, and tell us how it all started, because you have ties to Music Theater Kansas City originally. So tell us a little bit about the path you took that led you here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I grew up in Lawrence. So I'm a Lawrence kid, and I'm a Jayhawk, you know, by blood for sure. And I was actually a sports kid growing up. I was a junior Olympian basketball. I played a lot of travel baseball, a lot of travel soccer before it was even a big thing. And then, lo and behold, Carrie Danielson, now Carrie Danielson Panzik, who is the executive director of Music Theater Kansas City, entered my life. She was promoting a camp that she did every summer, 7 days of Broadway, where you went and did a show in 7 days. They were doing Grease. Who doesn't like Grease? I was already
That's
singing.
Right.
And I went down and experienced that for the first time, and it was everything that I was kind of missing in my life, and I started to pivot and go toward theater, and that's what I pursued for my career. And subsequently, the guy playing Mickey, the Lawrence legend Rick Averill, he and his wife Jeannie were my first introduction to theater at all, because Rick had the Seem to Be players that would travel around to the elementary schools in Lawrence, and then his wife Jeannie was the acting teacher at Lawrence High, and she was the one that introduced like Uta Hagen and Stanislavski and made it a craft. And this is just this wonderful full circle opportunity for me to come back and be with Carrie and now her daughter Julie Danielson, who is the artistic director and also the wonderful conductor of the orchestra, and she's also the director, and she's just got a mind for music.
She's on that keyboard the whole show.
Yeah, she's killing it.
She's a show just watching her and the music, right?
Right.
It's incredible.
And she's a bassist by trade. Like, that's a real instrument. So she's up there killing it. She put together a great orchestra, so we sound good, we look good. And so between Julie Carey, Rick, and then this wonderful cast that we have, I mean, it's a good show, and I'm having a wonderful time, and I really hope that more people come and see it, because like you were saying, it does hold true to the movie. It's not this razzmatazz, let's stop and do a jazz hand tap number. No, like, this is a drama with some music into it where you have to sing the subtext because you've gotten past the point of emotion that you can talk. Now you got to sing it.
Right. But it's and Nate, when you're going to go see it, I know you're hobbled, but they're going to get you in there.
we have handicapped seating for you. We got you.
What stood out to me, it's a physically demanding role because you're running around and then and it's for people that don't, it's hard for me to explain. You know, part of it, there's an element that's on the big screen, and that's what Nate and I are. Your
right.
Training sequence and other things, but then it plays out live on stage. But you're running around, you're doing different things. You have a fight scene. There's a lot, and then you got to sing. And I mean, it's just,
it's a pretty demanding track, I have to say. I'm pretty wiped by the end of it. I'm very thankful that we don't have two show days. I'm not sure if I'd be able to get through them, but. I tell you what, I definitely sweat off some ounces every night. So
there's so many really cool things that exist in Kansas City that sometimes I feel like, even though I've lived here my whole life, I'm unaware of. And when we came to do this recording for you at the stage at the theater, I've been to that movie theater before. I had zero idea that theater was behind.
It's awesome.
And we walked in, and you're like, wow, what a cool facility this is. What a cool theater it is. And so I wonder how many people out there who even enjoy theater don't even know that it's there. So mtkc.org. I want to keep saying that website, mtkc.org. Go look up the shows there. Go see this one for sure.
Please.
But support local theater. And when you look at like what your career has been and where it's taken you and all that, you're going to see some people that are very accomplished and very good at their craft on stage with you, including yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, agreed. MTKC has been around the Kansas City area for 30 years, and they started and they still continue with a children's program. And out of that program, they've put a number of people on Broadway and also television and film. I happen to be one of the first, or actually I was the first one that made it to Broadway, and they've had a long list of people come out of it. So Julie and her mom give this wonderful opportunity to kids, and they've got a great rotating staff of humans that come through and drop their knowledge, and they give a lot of opportunities both here in Kansas City. They take kids sometime to New York and give them opportunities out there. It's a really cool organization for your kids too, and as well as this pro side that Julie created about 6-7 years ago now, maybe a little bit longer than that, for the adults to come in. And sometimes they'll do a show where the kids will come in and get to experience a pro side along with the adults.
Let's take a quick break, hang out for another segment.
Absolutely.
We got Drew Starlin in the studio. We'll wrap things up with Drew after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You know, when we play this song, that we got some serious radio now. So I was asking Drew in the break about his appearance on Conan O'Brien, and then I asked him, he's been on different TV shows, Numbers, Law and Order, All My Children, Monk. I said, what was your favorite TV show you've been on, and what was your answer?
I'd have to say Monk, because Tony Shalhoub was such an amazing hands-on actor and producer during my scenes, which actually took a few days to record and film, and I got a great face for radio, so every time that I get on TV, I usually get killed. So I was killed in the episode, and they put a real body bag over me.
Oh, wow.
And every single time they hit cut, he was the one that would take it off, because you don't breathe underneath there. You're just sweating like crazy. And he was the one that was always 2 inches away from my face. Drew, are you okay? You want some water? Are you good? Every time they hailed cut, he pulled it off. So he was great. But the crazy story was while they're switching over lighting and they're switching over camera angles and stuff like that, you've got a chair to go sit in, and I'm sitting next to the two gentlemen that play the police officers, the detectives in the show for 2 days, 3 days, and I'm sitting there talking to them, and I didn't realize until day three, and I can't remember what it was that he said, but my eyes got so big, and I leaned forward, and I questioned, it puts the lotion in the basket? And it was Ted Levine, and I just did not
Buffalo
put together
Bill, baby.
That it was Buffalo Bill.
Oh man, yeah. That's what a thrilling encounter!
How did you react?
He just kind of, you know, he's like, yeah, it was something I did back in the day. Like, you know, he was kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm,
oh yeah,
like no big thing. He's like, no huge thing in my upbringing.
One of the greatest scenes ever. All right, tell people again why they should come out to see the Music Theater Kansas City production of Rocky at B&B Theater, mtkc.org.
mtkc.org, yes, we're doing this wonderful production of Rocky. You should see it. If you like good stories, if you like Rocky, if you like music, it has all of that. It is a drama love story of man versus universe. And if you guys like Steven and Nate, you know, they show up and they, you know, you guys look pretty good up there, I must say. And I have to also tell everybody out there, I know you guys get personality from these two as your devoted listeners. They are just as cool, if not cooler, in person. And it was such a good hang when you guys came out.
Well, we had a blast. And so we're just thrilled to be a part of it. And I saw it. And I'm one of the biggest Rocky fans you'll ever find. And I give it my stamp of approval. I loved it. And my family loved it. How about this? Caller 8 will give you a 4-pack of tickets to go see an upcoming performance of Rocky Live on stage starring our friend Drew Starlin. 913-3810-810. And it runs until August 28th. More information, mtkc.org. Drew, thanks for coming in, man.
Couldn't be happier to be here. Thank you so much, both of you.
Hey, at least your nose is not broken, right?
Not yet.
That's one of the songs, Nate.
I know.
Oh, my man, Drew Starlin, Rocky Live on stage, mtkc.org. Have a great day on Sports Radio 810, WHB.